I'd like to add my welcome to Simon's this evening. We're just so glad that you're here. You may not be accustomed to coming to church. That's absolutely fine. We just really are thrilled that you've come here this evening to spend time with us. And we hope that this will be an enriching experience for you and that you will enjoy what we've come to do this evening. You would not forgive me, I think, if I were to talk for a few minutes without mentioning the elephant in the room, the plunge pool, that is dangerously close to me. If I move forward too far, I'll probably end up in myself. And I also want to talk a little bit and explain about what this water is about and why we're about to put people completely underwater, not just dribble, not just a little pour, right under the water. And because it's quite dramatic, isn't it? And as you've heard those people talking, sharing their stories, I personally found it very dramatic. It's uncommon, isn't it, for people to stand in public and kind of undress. If you know what I mean, say who they are, say what they're really about, say what their struggles have been. It's a dramatic thing to do. It's quite an interesting thing to witness. It's compelling. And as they come and as they step into the water, and as our colleague, my brothers here will stand there, they will throw them under the water. And again, it will be dramatic. It will be incredible to see them just thrown underwater and lifted up again. And I want to explain to you that I think that there's something happening in this room this evening that goes beyond the merely human. I don't know about you, but most of my life seems awfully mundane. It seems like not much of any importance happens on any given day. And that most of the situations I find myself in are kind of pretty basically, you know, normal and uninteresting. But what we're gathered together to do this evening is that we are interacting not only with each other, but I believe we are interacting with the creator and the sustainer of the universe. That we are not only in the presence of other people, but we are in the presence of God. We are in the presence of the one who spoke and brought the universe to being, and who sustains the life of every single person. And as you've heard the stories and as you see this, you may not be believing this, and it's fine. But let me tell you what the Bible has to say about this. Let me share with you what the Bible has to say to you and to me through this situation and through this moment right here this evening. It's interesting when you read the Bible, an awful lot of the Bible is stories. An awful lot of the Bible is narratives. And as we had the reading earlier, we saw a narrative of a story that happened in Philippi. Philippi was a city in Greece 2,000 years ago. And Paul and Silas are the kind of stars of the show. And they're Christian missionaries. And they come to Philippi. And normally when they would go to a new city, they would go to the synagogue. And they would start meeting with the Jewish people. But there weren't enough Jewish men in the town to form a synagogue. So they went down by the riverside. And they met people who were, yes, Jews, but they also met people who were God-fearers. There are people who were following Judaism, but were not ethnically Jews, if you know what I mean. And every day they would come and they would walk through the city. The city had 200,000 people, size of Bath. It wasn't no mean city. But as they walked, one day, there was a slave girl who was can only be described as being possessed by a demon, possessed by a devil. And she was owned by a consortium of guys, and they made a lot of money out of her. Because when you came and talked to her, she would, I don't know what she did, you know, look at your hand, cross your hands with silver, whatever, and she would accurately predict your future. She would tell you not only, you know, I hear the letter J coming. Oh, no, is it an M? No, she would actually tell you what was going to happen in your future. It was spooky. And when she saw Paul and Silas, she was amazed because around them she could see something in them that other people could not. She could see some kind of power and some kind of authority in them that other people didn't notice. And so she started following them down the road. And whenever she saw them, she would leave what she was doing and make her way down the road after them. And she would shout out. She would say, "These men are the servants of the Most High God. And they're telling you the way to be saved. And she did it day after day after day. And it drove Paul nuts. Drove him bonkers. Because he was just trying to, you know, do his job. And this girl is following him, he's shouting. And so one day he turns around and he says, and he speaks not to the girl, but to the spirit living inside of her. And he says, right, be gone. And the spirit goes. And suddenly this girl is standing there and she feels a whole lot better. She feels great. She no longer feels oppressed. She no longer feels like she's having these nightmares at night. She no longer feels depressed. She no longer feels controlled. She no longer feels crushed. She feels alive. She feels alive. But her ability as a fortune teller is ruined. She can't tell the future anymore. So the consortium of guys who own this girl are really, really annoyed now. And so they take Paul and Silas to court. Can you imagine in this country what would happen? Okay, yeah, I'm going to court. I want to take this person to court because they cast a demon out of my slave girl and now she can't tell fortunes. You know, our society wouldn't understand it. And yet, in that society, they understood it very, very clearly. And they took Paul and Silas to court. And as they were taking them, they were going through the city and the people in the city were disturbed. They were disturbed because something had come to wreck the equilibrium. And so, as often will happen with crowds, the crowd became violent. And so the crowd are pounding on Paul and Silas and trying to beat them up. And the magistrates who were there to judge them are now becoming their protectors. And they take them into the courthouse and they find them guilty of causing a disturbance. And they get some sticks out, rods, and they beat them with the rods. And then they put them in prison. So there they are, and night falls down, and the jailer is told, okay, you keep an eye on these guys, and he has his little flat maybe above the prison. And all night, the jailer's there with his family, and he can hear some singing, and he can hear some people singing. And he thinks, well, who on earth is singing? So he puts his head out of the window, and he can't see anything, so he goes out in front of the jail, and he looks inside the prison, and there are Paul and Silas, and they're singing away like crazy guys. They're having a great sing-song, and the other prisoners are sitting there watching. And he can't believe it. Are they stoic? Are they just really, really got, you know, strong constitutions? No. They feel joy. They feel excitement. They feel a passion. There's something that is welling up inside of them that makes them just want to sing. It's amazing. And then as he goes to bed, an earthquake hits the town. And suddenly everything's shaking. And you know, these buildings, they're not designed to stand under earthquakes. And so the prison, all the doors come shaking off the prison doors. And the jailer gets up, he runs down, and he looks inside, and obviously there's no, you know, electric lights or anything. So he can't see anybody in the prison. So he assumes that they've all run. So he knows that he will pay with his life for the loss of the prisoners. Okay? He's gonna pay with his life. That's just the way they do things. And so he thinks that maybe his family will also be killed. So he thinks, I'll do the honorable thing. He pulls the sword out, trembling, and is about to throw himself on his sword. And suddenly Paul cries out from the prison and says, don't do yourself any harm. We're all here, safe and sound. And he pulls Paul out, and then he says these words, what must I do to be saved? What must I do to be saved? And Paul says, believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and you will be saved and your whole family. And he listens to Paul and they talk. And then he takes Paul and Silas, because, you know, they're bloody and they're beaten up and everything. He takes them to the bathhouse and they have a pool like this in the public bathhouse. And he washes them down himself. And then they turn around and they baptize him and his family. And I don't want to speak for long this evening, but I just want to pull out 3 points about this. This is the kind of thing that happens when the power of God comes to town. When the power of God comes to town. Paul and Silas were men invested with the power of the living God. God's Holy Spirit was living in them. And so as they met him, people would meet Paul and Silas, and they would enter into a relationship with God because they'd met Paul and Silas. The demonic forces that were at work in this girl, and she, I don't know if you've seen The Exorcist, but she would make the exorcist look tame. The demonic forces at work in this girl, when they see the power of God, they cannot stand in the presence and they have to flee. It was God's plan that they suffer pain, and we'll go back to that in a minute. But he gave them power in the pain to have so much joy that they could sing. It was an earthquake sent by God, but the power of God preserved their lives even as the building shook. There's a suicidal man about to kill himself, and the power of God in them speaks to that man, and he is saved from his own suicidal tendencies. They talk to a family, and the power of God flows through them, and the whole family is changed. The power of God has come to town. And the same power that saved the jailer and is the same power that brought Jesus Christ from the dead. That power enabled Jesus to say to God, not my will, but yours. And he was put to death. And the power of God, it says, raised him up from the dead. That power enabled Paul, like Paul, to offer his back to be beaten. The power gave him the power to let himself be crucified. And that power raised him. And I want to say something this evening. Please listen. We believe in the power of God here. I believe in the power of God. I believe in the power of God to change people here tonight. You may have come into this room and you don't want to be here. Uncomfortable, unhappy like the Philippians with any idea of change. Maybe you felt controlled and dominated by habits. Maybe you feel that there are behavior patterns that you're so attached to you can never leave them. And yet you recognize they're destructive. The power of God is here tonight. The power of God can set people free. The power of God can bring peace and joy. The power of God can fix marriages and families. The power of God can give you a reason for living. The power of God can save you for an eternity. The power of God has come to town, and the power of God is here this evening. But when the power of God comes, also comes a moment of crisis. The jailer is throwing himself on the sword, and Paul says, "Don't do it. We're all safe." And the guy says, "What must I do to be saved? What must I do to be saved?" He has a moment of crisis. Now, what he needs to do is to be reconciled.